Yo, D-Boy.
Yo.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Ladies and gents, welcome to MD Podcast. And before we get started, I just want to say thanks to everybody that's been supporting Season 1 all the way through Season 10. And by the time you guys hear this, this is actually Season 10, Episode 6. Now, this artist right here, man, is probably one of the first artists I met in San Diego that really showed me love. And I want to say rest in peace to Wax Click. He's the promoter that was the reason how I met this artist. And there's a lot of great memories. Like, I remember one night we opened for Rappin' Forte. We definitely did some of the 16 bar challenges together. I forgot the name of that venue, but you know, like, he's always been supportive of me, never been a hater, man. He's always just been encouraging every time he sees me. And I feel like real MCs recognize real MCs. And one thing I know about this cat is that he has a lot of underground classics, a lot of crazy guest features. You know, his album covers, Welcome to Salty D, San Diego Hall of Fame, Minor Setback for a Major Comeback, and the newest one is The West Coast Has Never Sounded Like This Before, which dropped in 2024. And I like how his catalog is at least 24 songs, or at least 20 songs or more per album, and that lets me know, like, he's been working, man. And with that being said, we got the artist formerly known as D-Boy P-Chase, but now goes by Paper Chaser. What's up, though, D-Boy?
What's going on with it, man?
Thanks for doing the show, man. I appreciate you.
No problem.
So, I asked all my guests, D-Boy, where were you born and raised?
I'm born in San Jose, California. Then I was, raised in East Palo Alto, which is a suburb in the Bay Area. And I moved to San Diego when I was about, seven.
D-Boy, can you hear me? Yo, D-Boy, can you hear me? Yo. Yo.
I think my phone timed out. My bad. Did you get all that or no?
So, yo, you were born in the Bay Area, right? So, Palo Alto?
Yeah, I was born in San Jose, but I was raised in East Palo Alto. And then I moved to San Diego when I was, 7 years old. So, pretty much, I consider myself a Dago. They go do, but you know, I'm saying originally from the Bay Area though.
How did you end up in San Diego? Like, was there a reason why you guys moved out here from the Bay?
Long story short is my mom and dad were getting into it a lot, and she needed to get away from him to try to, you know what I mean, diffuse the situation. So one day she went to the Greyhound and said, How can I get out of here? And they said, she only had enough money to get to a certain area, and they was like, well, San Diego is a place, and then she just basically just moved to San Diego.
What do you remember about the Bay? Like, even though you were there for 7 years, but what do you remember growing up? Like, even though, you know, you left at a young age, do you remember the community?
Me being a Niners fan, my whole family is Niners fans. So I just remember going to the Joe Montana and seeing all the games when I was 5 or 6. Great America. It was back then, it was the 80s. So it was it was pretty bad. It had the crack pandemic going on. So it was a lot of crazy stuff going on back then.
What was your first impression of San Diego? And where in San Diego did you arrive at, as soon as you got here?
Well, we were kind of broke, so we ended up going to St. Vincent de Paul, which is a shelter downtown. And back then in the 80s in San Diego, downtown was just had a whole lot of homeless. So the first thing I thought was, where the hell are we at? I was like, oh, Mom, I don't know if I want to live here. But, you know, that was just because we got off the Greyhound downtown. But you know, I had never really seen all the outskirts of how beautiful the city was.
Yeah, you've been through some shit, D. So how long did it take for you guys to kind of get your feet and stand on your own 2 feet out here, get acclimated in SD?
I think we were in the shelter for about 3 months or so. Then my mom found a good job and got a little one bedroom, and then went up from there.
Mad props to Mom, man. Mad props to Mom.
Yeah.
Making sacrifices and making moves, you know?
Hella.
So first of all, whether it's mom's side or dad's side, did your family have any musical talents? Was anybody in the music industry or just, you know, played an instrument or?
No, I would say most of my music stuff came from my auntie. She used to just play all of the old Funkadelic and, you know what I mean, Stevie Wonder and Anita Baker and Luther Vandross. And I mean, every time it was time to clean the house, she would throw on some some music, and it was time. When the music came on, you knew it was time to get up and get a vacuum or do something before you get a whooping. So you spend all day listening to nothing but, you know, classic hits. Eventually, it just gets embedded in your brain.
What was the first hip-hop song you remember hearing that really left a mark on you? Like, wow, I want to do that shit.
I think it's the show with Dougie Fresh and Slick Rick. The 6 minutes Dougie Fresh, you're on.
How old were you when that came out, D?
Like 5. I just remember they had that Inspector Gadget sample in there, and that was like one of my favorite cartoons. So once I heard that, I was pretty much in love from that point on.
Now, in San Diego, what do you remember about the community here growing up, like as far as hip-hop? Like, did you see breakdancers in the hood? Did you see, you know, was hip-hop alive in SD around that time?
Not really. I mean, once NWA came out, I guess you could start, because there was a lot of gangbanging going on in San Diego in the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't really, couldn't go anywhere. The first concert I ever went to was a LL Cool J Nitro tour.
No way.
Yeah, it had LL Cool J, Slick Rick, De La Soul, Too Short, NWA, the DOC. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else, but that whole lineup was like, I mean, that's the craziest lineup I've ever seen. And that was my first concert ever. And then, you know, first rapper I ever heard from San Diego that I really, when I went to FamArt, I seen him selling his tapes was Big June.
So, wow.
Yeah, I bought one of his singles from him, and then he was the first person that I could see in San Diego doing it, and helped me believe that you can actually be a rapper coming out of San Diego.
Shout out to Big June, man. SD legend for sure, right? Let me ask you this. What was the first 3 albums that you owned or you bought with your own money? Or you owned? Like, first 3 albums.
I would say, I bought the Fat Boys back in the day as a kid. I think that was when they made that movie Disorderlies or whatever. I remember DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, and probably like Kid and Play or something, because back then I was as a kid, my mom wouldn't let me listen to all the crazy stuff. I had to get the radio edits, and so I would have to sneak and listen to NWA and stuff like that.
So when you saw the DOC, this was before the accident, huh?
Oh, yeah, this was like 1989, wow. So it's like NWA was still together before Ice Cube left the group and stuff like that.
So you saw them with Ice Cube and the DOC?
Yeah, and Eazy.
Whoa.
I was only 9 years old. My mom was a pretty cool mom. She knew how much I loved all the music, and I was like, for my, I think my 9th birthday, she took me to San Diego.
What venue was this? What do you remember the venue for LL?
Yeah, it was a San Diego Sports Arena.
No way.
Yo.
So, who would be, you think, like, top 3 MCs? No. Let's say top 4. Top 4 MCs that influence your style.
As a kid, I mean, I think everybody, when I, back in the 80s, LL Cool J was my first favorite rapper. I was like, you know what I mean? I'm bad. I was like, oh my God, this dude's, he's insane. But then after, mm-hmm. once NWA came out, then I could really identify more with them, because they were talking about stuff that I could see, you know, I mean, West Coast stuff. So I would go from LL Cool J to Ice Cube. Ice Cube became my favorite rapper for a while. After Ice Cube, I guess, like when Death Row came out, I started seeing like how lyricists could, you know, I mean, it's a little more than just, you know, cruising down the street in my 6'4". It's more play with wordplay. So Corrupt really was one of my favorite rappers, because I just loved the technique and all the words he would use. And then after Corrupt, I started listening to a lot of, found out about Redman, and Redman became one of my favorite rappers ever. And then I started, you know, listening to more East Coast music, because I mean, being on the West, you don't really listen to too much of that. But then, you know, I started picking up some Wu-Tang or some Notorious Big, and MCs like that, starting to learn how to, you know, get some wordplay and how to do all your little patterns and stuff like that, cadences.
What came to you first, freestyling or writing rhymes? Which one came first to you?
I wrote my first rap when I was like 11, but yeah, so it was writing. I had to, you know, because I wanted to learn how to put the words together. When I freestyled, I didn't have any bars, so I wouldn't know what words to use. I'd just be stuck. So I think it would be writing first, and then, you know, practicing freestyling and writing over and over. Eventually you get better.
around what age do you think you started taking the stab at freestyling, even if it's just by yourself, like in the room?
Me and some of my friends, shout out my homeboy Smurf, they were already rapping when I met them. And then I would come over to their house. I would be a little shy because I would, you know, they were good and I wasn't. And then I would eventually just jump in and start trying and keep messing up occasionally. And then, you know, a couple months later, all of a sudden you're starting to get better and better and being able to, then I started surpassing them.
And then at what point did you start recording your voice onto the mic? Like when you start fucking around with like actually like recording your voice and hearing it back.
Right. My mom bought me one of those little karaoke machines. So I used to go down in the garage and just, you know, I mean, spend hours rapping over, you know, I would get singles, and whenever the singles had like an instrumental on the back of it, I would sit there and practice on those. So that was my first time really just recording over and over. I didn't get into a professional studio until I was like 16 years old. For my 16th birthday, my mom got me a couple hours in the studio. So that was my first time really making a song and putting it on a CD.
What's the name of the song?
Too Many MCs, Not Enough Mics.
what year was this?
I was probably going, that sample was from the Fugees, where Wyclef says, "Too many MCs, not enough mics." I think that was about like 96.
Oh, man. That Fugees album was a classic, yo.
Yeah, the score, definitely.
And at what point, so you graduate high school, and then what was the game plan then? High school, then what was next?
Well, when I graduated high school, first, my homeboy Peter Smolik, shout out Peter Smolik and Brandon Turner, they're professional skaters, and they were already signed to Osiris and Shorties, and so they were going on tour, and they took us on tour with them, you know what I mean? So we went to Seattle, San Francisco, Denver.
Wow. Can you hear me? I think your phone timed out, D. Yo, yo. Yo, D.
I don't know why my phone keeps timing out, you know, from the little app. So if I pause out, it's just I have to re-put my code back in.
But no worries. So you got a chance to tour it right out of high school.
Pretty much. I graduated when I was 17, and then I moved out of my mom's house, and then that's right when we met Peter Smolik, and he was like, he loved the way we rapped, and he was trying to do everything he could to help us get a deal, and he was basically, he was paying for all the flights and everything else. He just believed in us, but he would take us to all the cities he went to go do his skateboarding, and we would rock shows while we were there. So shout out to Peter Smolik. He always looked out for us.
What did you learn about yourself as a touring artist? Like, what did you learn about the game? Like, what did it expose you to? Like, at 18, 17, you know, like, oh, shit. Like,
yeah, well, I mean, at first it was just breath control, you know, I mean, trying to get on the stage, and then how to rock a crowd and get people to, you know, chant things with you, or, you know, try to get them to do what you tell them to do. I mean, at first it was a little intimidating because we did a show in Seattle. It was like 5,000 people, and it was like one of my very first shows. So I was like, oh, my God. Kind of gets a little surreal.
So at what point did you start forming the group Federals? Like what year did you form the group?
Well, me and my homeboy Austin and my homeboy Matt had it. We all went to Kearney High School, and we were normally, we were called like the platoon. And then my other homeboys, the other half of the Federals was Garth Grizz, Exact, and Marlin. He used to go by Exist. And they used to be Psychotic Funk. They were actually breakdancers. And we all met up one day at Kearney High School, or Kearney Rec. And it was like four of us and the four of them. And we all just happened to be like, they saw us freestyling and Cypher. And they pulled up and we all started rapping. And everybody started going crazy. Like, oh, we should all be one group. And then we all sat around trying to come up with a name. And came up with probably about 30, 40 different names. And we didn't like none of them. And one day we went to a party and he was like, this is Federal or something like that. And somehow it just turned out to be the Federal. So that was like 96, 97.
And you guys were a group for about 15 years, right? Like you told me, like for at least more than a decade.
Yeah, we went through transitions. Like some people fell off. Some people, you know, there's always arguments in groups and stuff like that. So we had, probably around 2003 or 2004, we decided to you know, go just four members. It was me, Garth Grizz, Juice, Exact, and Mocha. Austin MP and Exist had pretty much fell off and just, you know, went off and did their own thing. And then we decided to turn into, from the Federals to Fault Line Entertainment. And then from that point on, we went and became the Donation. And then, you know, we dropped our first group project, which we were actually together for about 12 years and didn't drop our first project until like 2009, which was, I mean, it took forever, but it was just a lot of turmoil. We had our studio equipment stolen from us once, and we had like two albums on that equipment and never backed it up. So when the people stole our studio equipment, we actually lost like 2 years worth of hard work.
Fuck, man. You definitely addressed that in the very last song. Yeah. The West Coast, like this before. I love that song. It was like a summary, you know, of everything that's been going down.
Yeah, well, God understand.
Mm-hmm. What are the pros and cons of being in the group? Let's start with the pros.
The pros is, I mean, still sharp and still. So all my guys, we would be in the garage for, you know, I mean, nights on end. You talk about putting 10,000 hours of hard work and becomes a master. I think we put in about a good 20 or 30,000 hours. We would just pull names out of the hat and battle each other and, you know, I mean, just making each other better. You're looking over your shoulder and seeing who, what this guy's right, and you don't want to be the weak link, so it makes you get better. I'd say the cons is, well, I would always say sometimes there's hidden agendas or people like, you know, competing against each other when they should be motivating each other. So it's kind of like the Wu-Tang when they pushed each other, it was be one person solo time. It's your time to shine. It's your time to shine. Sometimes I think there's a little bit of hidden jealousy within the group. If one person is, you know, getting more shine or more love than the other people, kind of brings out some envy and jealousy too.
But I guess there's nothing wrong with some silent competition, right? That
long as it's healthy, then yeah. But if it becomes starting to be like, you know, I mean, competing on without the other person knowing or just not wanting them to succeed, then it's not healthy.
And then you throw money in the mix. I bet it gets even kind of crazy. We've seen it happen to NWA for sure.
Well,
you know?
I mean, every group, like EPMD, NWA, Fat Boys broke up. Everybody breaks up at some point in time, unfortunately, unless, you know, like, but they hopefully come back together.
Mm-hmm. And then I would say, like, when you find out about these groups breaking up, when you get to the root of it and the bottom of it, like, I would say 70% of the time, it really is about money, huh? Like,
yeah.
I don't know, at least in the industry, that's what you hear.
Too. Most of it is about money. And, you know, I mean, one person, or like, kind of like Wu-Tang, when Method Man started blowing up and he would be the forefront. And it's like, then like you got and getting the same love, you kind of be like, man, what the hell? You're not the leader and stuff like that.
Yeah, and there's still turmoil sometimes with Wu-Tang. Like there's turmoil every like once every 3 years. You'll hear about it, you know?
Right, but they still work it out at the end.
Yeah, right now though, they're getting that bag in Vegas for sure. They got the residency in Vegas, man. Who would have thought, right?
Right.
They went from Celine Dion to Wu-Tang in Vegas.
30 years ago, if you would have said you was gonna get a residency, they looked at you like it was crazy.
And that's how you know hip hop is growing and maturing, because Vegas is taking a chance in us, you know.
I would definitely have to go check that out.
No doubt, dude. Let me ask you this: at what point did you decide to go solo? Like, what was the first, like, when did you decide to, like, all right, I'm going to pursue the solo style?
I used to want to make a solo album, like, back in 2004 and 5, but this dude, GTA, he used to be our producer. He's the guy that set up our studio equipment in our garage. He was always giving me advice, kind of like a mentor. He was like, if I was you, I would just, you know, stay within the group. You don't, you know what I mean? Don't do it yet. You don't want people to get jealous and shit like that. So I'd be like, delaying it. But then finally I got to about like 2009 and I was already like 27 or 28 and nothing's happening as a group, and there's nothing wrong with a solo project, you know what I mean? So I put one out and it kind of did backfire because I think people thought I was leaving the group or I was going to go, you know, thought I was better than everybody, but you should be able to venture off and do some solo and still come back and be back within the group.
What would it take to get Federals back together?
I mean, we still kick it. I mean, I was over at Grizz's house not too long ago. The only problem is Exact is out in El Paso. Me, Grizz, and then Mocha. Mocha was the girl rapper from our group. She just moved back. She just moved back to San Diego. She was probably one of the best in the group when it comes to style. Oh yeah, she's crazy. So I mean, we've been talking about it for over a year now. But you know, it always we get beats together and then we get in the studio, get drunk, and then like we'll go a couple months without doing it again. So one of these days, we just got to sit down and knock it out.
I love it, man. I love it. Loyalty, loyalty and communication is everything, especially with those you started with. You know, that's dope.
No doubt.
Okay, so by the time I met you, when I met D, you were definitely promoting Welcome to the Salty D. Yo, like, I remember that cover, right? I remember my first question for D. Hey, dog, who the fuck made this cover? This cover's sick. And D was never selfish with his plugs. Like, he would tell me, like, all right, this is the person you hit up, Marlon. Like, you were never selfish with your plugs and connects. That's one thing I like about D-Boy, man.
Right.
What made you title it that?
Well, they call San Diego the Salty D because they say that we hate on each other and everybody out here is salty. It's like a crab in a bucket mentality, which is why they say San Diego can't blow up as a city because we're too busy competing with.
I think you timed out, D.
San Diego the Salty D. So I was tying it.
You timed out for a little bit. Sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, so you titled it Salty D because they say it's kind of like a crab in the bucket mentality.
Right, like San Diego is a Salty D, meaning everybody out here is salty.
Do you think that's true?
I mean
obviously, right? Because you titled it that, huh?
Well, actually, what it was.
Yo, D, can you hear me?
And that's why I featured so many people on there, but it ended up being an album for me. But yeah, so in some way, shape, or form, I mean, if you go to the Bay Area, all the artists are working together. If you go to like Atlanta, all the artists are working together, New York. But out here is kind of different because of the politics of the gang banging. You know what I'm saying? Some people can't work with other people, even though, you know what I mean, you would like to. It's just too much history and shit like that comes along with it. So, and it's the gangbanging stuff that kind of prevents a lot of the working that could be happening. But I think in San Diego's come a long way because I've been watching it ever since I used to go to the Improv or all the Lion's Den where we used to do all our freestyling and stuff back in the day. It was more underground hip hop, you know what I mean, more backpack rapping. But now I'm starting to see, you know what I mean, people are starting to work with people from the other side of town. You might see a dude from Lincoln do a song with a dude from Skyline, which you would never see before because, you know what I mean, they got so much history of, you know what I mean, violence and stuff like that in the past. So hopefully it could continue.
So you, I guess it's safe to say, like, whatever's going on in the streets, it kind of spills over the music, right?
Right. It's like Mitchie Slick and Big June or something like that. You know, you are Mitchie Slick and JL Felony just recently made like their first song together over after all these years because back in the day it was never gonna happen.
Super long overdue, huh? Mitchie Slick and JL?
Right.
For real. What was the effect when What You're Gonna Do came out? When JL came out with Method Man and DMX? What was that? What was the energy in San Diego like when that shit came out?
I mean, that was the biggest. I mean, I think to this day, still the biggest, except for maybe Rob Stone's song, the Kill Bill song. But up until then, you had never seen a San Diego artist, I mean, working with Redman, Method Man, LL Cool J, and DMX and stuff like that. So we were like, oh, wow, it's really happening.
Like, J.O. Felony's East Coast Connects run deep. Like, he got signed by Jam Master J, man.
Yeah, he was in Def Jam and all that. So, I think he was the only West Coast artist on Def Jam at the time.
So, did you get any backlash from the title? I know the title was controversial, Welcome to Salty D. Like, did you get anyone like, hey, man, why'd you title it that? What you mean?
No. Actually, that was my first time meeting Mitchie Slick in person. He was like, man, I love that. Has a girl from the Salt. Shaker, I don't know what the name of that company is, but that's basically what it is. It's a replica of that girl from Morton Salt. That's what it is. So,
What's your favorite song on Welcome to Salty D?
What's your top two? I haven't heard it and I listened to it in a while, but I would say probably the 100 bars from Dago, because that was my first time doing a 100 bar verse.
Crazy.
I had to go perform it though. It's a lot different when you're running around on stage and doing a 5 minute verse.
Wow. Now let's talk about, so after Welcome to Salty D, was San Diego Hall of Fame next?
Welcome to the Salty. Well, first I did Invasion of the Land Sharks, was 2013. I did Welcome to the Salty D, 2015. Then I did Paintings on a Digital Canvas, 2016.
Let's talk right there. So Digital Paintings on a Canvas. I got to talk about this, man. You got features with 2 Chainz, Lil Wayne, Snoop, and so many more. Like, what was the feedback from SD when that came out?
I had a release party, but a lot of it was digital, and then I was waiting for people to, like, because everybody didn't believe I was gonna have these people on the album. They were like, there's no way he's got all these features. And then finally when I came out with it, people were like, damn, where the hell, how did you do that?
Yeah. So,
I mean, a lot of it was because I'm with Empire Distribution, and before you would have to get like a release. The artist would have to release it and give you permission to use the verse. So now I'm saying, I couldn't do that album if I wanted to now, because you're not allowed to release verses without the consent of the artist and the label they signed to. So I got lucky at that point in time, and really all it was this guy named Flossie. He's a shout out to Flossie. He has a bunch of verses on his computer from these artists, and he will sell them to you for, you know what I mean, some odd amount, and then you take that verse, which is an acapella. I would give it to Steve Vicious, and Steve Vicious knows how to figure out the tempo of the actual track that he already made. So he'd make a beat that would fit that tempo, and then basically we would place that the vocal onto the track, and then I would write something similar, or, you know what I mean, to keep it in the same frame or whatever the concept is of the song. So that's pretty much how we got all that tied in together. And a lot of people are just like, basically all it does is show that you're capable of being on the same track with, you know, Lil Wayne, 2 Chainz, Snoop Dogg, all those people on there that were on there, Wiz Khalifa, Neo. So it all came together. It was probably one of my best projects to this day.
Yeah, man, you goddamn right. Word up. I've been bumping that shit. So after that, you dropped San Diego Hall of Fame?
In 2016, I dropped Paintings on a Digital Canvas, and I got into some legal problems in 2017/18. I had to spend a whole year in jail in Seattle, unfortunately. Was on the run for a while, so I wasn't making any music. I was just trying to stay out of jail. But back in 2019, I got released, and then the first thing I did is, you know, I mean, obviously get back in the studio, try to knock off the rust, and I did a minor setback for a major comeback.
How was that like in the studio after like you got caught up in some shit and then getting back in the studio? How was it like getting the rust off and just to get back in the lab with all that?
Yeah, the first couple, first couple weeks or whatever, when you're writing your verses, I mean, I had been doing a little bit of writing while I was locked up, but not much, because I was just depressed and I wasn't feeling it. Some people, when they go to jail, they just write books and books and books of lyrics, and, you know, I mean, they're ready to go when they come out, but it wasn't that way for me. I was depressed. But finally, when I got in the studio, it took about, I did the PS back. Once I knocked that song out, and I was all cruisy. I mean, after you've done it for 20 years, it's like riding a bike.
I remember D disappeared for a while. I remember I didn't hear from D for a while, man. And then out of nowhere, D comes back. And I remember keeping in touch with him, like, yo, dog, we've always kept in touch, and that's really cool. Let me ask you this. What would be your advice for young brothers out here in the streets to stay out of jail? Like, what would be your advice for them? And what would be your advice for those getting out to start a new life? What are the tips to get out of that depression, you know?
I mean, I would say, well, for me, it was because I was influenced by watching other people. You know, when you're a kid and you're playing basketball and you see guys driving by in, like, Escalades and making all this money, you want to get out there and get some of that too. But, I mean, really, in the long run, there's only 2 ways you're going to get out of this. It's either going to be dead or in jail. You know, if you're going to do it the wrong way, you already know what to expect. So I would just say, you know, the best way, I mean, everybody wants to be a rapper or a basketball player or a football player. And nobody wants to be a mechanic. Nobody wants to be, you know what I mean, the stuff that really, really is going to get you through life. I would say just always have a plan B. Don't go chasing the easy route or trying to get a quick fix. Because in the long run, it's inevitable. It's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when you're going to go to jail or something bad's going to happen. And if you're just getting out, you know what I mean, you got to avoid the potholes or trying to go right back to what you used to do. Excuse me. Because it's going to be hard when you first get out. And you're used to making thousands of dollars every day. Now you have to go to work and you have a felony on your record. You can't get a job. And, you know, it's hard to avoid the trying to go back to what you know best. But, you know, you have to do that. Otherwise, you're just going to be right back where you were.
The system's kind of fucked up, too, because, like, I don't know, man. It forces brothers sometimes to, like, get back in that same shit because there's no job available, you know? Like, the job situation when, you know what I'm saying? Like,
exactly.
The way the system's set up, bro, like, it's almost like we're forced in the corner to go back to the same shit.
Yeah, I got 5 felonies and a strike, so jobs are not aplenty, but, you know, you got to work it out, put yourself through school or do whatever you got to do.
Let me ask you this, D. Fatherhood. What has fatherhood taught you in this life?
I had my son. Well, my baby mama got pregnant when I was only 19. This was back when I was still on tour. Mm-hmm. Actually, I was going to Mesa College and got an AA. I had to drop out of college and get a job, you know what I mean, just to put food on the table. So, you know, basically, I mean, I would have, if I could do it all over, I would have waited until I was situated or older and had everything ready to go. But, you know, it may have forced you to become a man quicker than you wanted to be. But I mean, if I could do it all over again, I would want to be married and be able to be there full time. Me and my baby mama separated when my son was 2. So I really only got to visit, you know, pick him up on Wednesdays and weekends. And there's only so much fathering you can do when you're only there part time. So that's the only thing I would want to do it is be there full time, have my kids living with me.
What are some of the knowledge you're dropping on him as he's a grown man now too?
Like, yeah. Well, I just tell him the same things. Like it's the same thing. He used to play football and all that, but then he started smoking weed, and it's all the same things that urban lifestyle, you know what I mean, kids see. They want to go do that. I'm just telling him, don't be like your dad. You know, I've already learned from me. Don't be like me. Be better than me. You know, I'll tell him about all the things that are going to be out here, the pitfalls and the things you're going to fall for. And I try to get him to get in the military because I'm like, this is a safe bet for you. Get your credit score. You have a good, you know what I mean, a good platform to work from. But, you know, it's hard to tell somebody something. He's like, well, look at you. And I'm like, well, you know, you want him to be better than you, not like me.
No doubt, no doubt. So let's talk about San Diego Hall of Fame, man. Like, what was the process making that album?
That was right when pandemic started. So I had just got extradited back to California and finally got released. So then I bought myself some studio equipment because in the pandemic, everything was closed down. So I mean, I bought Pro Tools 11 and a Rode mic and all that. I just asked Steve Vicious what I could buy to have a basic setup. So I had it in my bedroom, basically, and, you know, so we couldn't go anywhere. So all I was doing was just sitting there downloading beats and coming up with concepts and all that, and emailing it to other artists so that I can get the features. And then eventually, you know, I got a good 20, 25 songs saved up and picked the best, you know, I mean, how many ever was on there. I think 20 songs that were on there. And, you know, I sent them, emailed them to Steve Vicious to get mixed and mastered. And finally, we came with it. I think 2021, 6/19, because it was, you know, 6/19.
What are the days out of the days in the week? What are the days you usually record? Do you have a certain day?
No, I try to, because lately I've been trying to get more content, doing like the Freestyle Fridays or West Coast Wednesdays and things like that. So I'm trying to get in there more. Sometimes it's you know, it's just a matter of if you're feeling the vibe or not, and it depends on how stressful life is or what's going on. I try to, the days that I really don't feel like it, I try to do it anyway, because that's, you know what I mean, it gets you to force yourself to get some stuff out there. Even when you just feel like going to bed, you got to get in there and do the work.
No doubt, man. The West Coast has never sounded like this before. What made you title it that?
Well, first it was going to be the California Kid, but then I did a track with King Cricket, aka Cricket Eye. Shout out Cricket Eye. And then the hook, the homegirl did the hook, KP, and she did the West Coast Never Sounded Like This. I like that was my favorite song on the whole album, and I mean it's featuring Cricket Eye, so I was like, well, I got to use that one.
Yeah, the beats are crazy, man. I was telling D like off camp, off air, like. You're lyrical, but you figured out how to make some songs that caters to the radio. And the way I see it is like, you know what, dude? Great MCs know how to do that. Like, we can start with Jay-Z, we can start with Biggie, you know, like, super lyrical, but they just knew how to cater to the radio. Where do you think you got that style from? Was that something that was developed throughout the years? Like you're as underground as it can get, but then you also know how to cater to the ladies with the songs, you know?
Right. I think it was started, well, me and my crew, we were backpack rappers. We used to, we used to battle all the time, but then we would want to get our songs on the radio at Gem Z90 or something, and they'd be like, we're not playing that shit. you guys get, that's, nobody's going to dance to that. So then, you know, we would spend hours in the studio trying to come up with concepts for the ladies. Most of them would fall flat, but over the years, we would start learning more and more about, you know, cadences and getting different hooks, getting girls to sing the hooks and stuff like that, kind of like, you know, learning it. Before you know it, you just, you know, every album I make, I want to make at least like 2 or 3 for the ladies, you know, like a weed song or a real life song, something about like that's really going on in the world, and, you know, mix those all together with the actual hardcore shit, you have a little bit of, you know, I mean, difference in the album.
Oh, and one thing I was telling D, man, you know, your consistency on making music videos is pretty, like, consistent. Like, I'm amazed. Like, how many music videos you got right now on YouTube, bro? All in all.
I think it's about 25 out there. Oh, I just shot 2 more right now. So, Will God Understand should be coming out soon. And then...
For real?
Yeah, I just did that one in Balboa Park, like in the little cathedral area. And then we're going to do Freak Like Adina. I shot the beginning of that one. Then we're going to have a little house party, like a 90s theme house party, so we can get that one done. So I should be having about a good 3 or 4 coming out pretty soon.
What's the importance of the music video in 2024? Do you think it's like music videos are still necessary, right, for the visuals?
Right.
Like, hip-hop heads are visual. They want to see who the artist is, you know?
Definitely. The visual is just connected to the actual song so people can see what you were, you know, what the vibe is. And then my dude, TR Films, shout out TR Films. He's like one of those super graphic guys who do all that crazy stuff. Like my last video, I, where it had all the skulls and setting everything on fire. And you know, he does all kind of crazy shit. So he makes it look, you know, I mean, it goes crazy. And people see that. That draws them to your pages and your Instagrams or wherever so they can check out more of your music. So it's more of a tool to get everybody to check you out.
Would you ever do Welcome to the Salty D Part 2?
Actually, I did have the cover made. This is before I went to jail. It was supposed to be a 50% less sodium.
so, no way.
Yeah, I had a cover somewhere, but then I was getting the process started, and that's when I got caught up. So I was thinking about doing it. I already have, I think I have the cover somewhere. So I have to hit up Craze Inc. Shout out Craze Inc. She's the one that did the original Welcome to the Salty D cover. And she just did the West Coast Never Sounded Like This too. And the paintings on a digital canvas. So she does a lot of my covers, and she already has had that one going, the 50% light sodium.
What are you bumping? Like, who are you bumping these days? Like, what you think of Griselda, the whole Griselda movement? You feeling that?
Yeah, I mean, when I first got home, that was the first time I heard of him. I was like, oh, finally, real hip hop is back. It's grimy. You know what I'm saying? But now it seems like everybody's biting their style. So that's a problem with hip hop nowadays. Like, one person's doing one thing, now everybody wants to start doing it. I like them because they have the Alchemist type beats and real punchlines and metaphors. So I was like, finally, hip hop's back. But, you know, it gets oversaturated when everybody starts doing the same thing.
Like, you can't deny the influence of Wu-Tang and Mobb Deep when you hear them, right? Right. Like, you can't deny it. Like, they're from that cloth. Of course, they're from NY, dude.
Right, like from Boot Camp Click or something like that.
what would be your advice for upcoming artists right now that's trying to get in this?
I mean, one thing I would just say is, you know, I mean, just put out lots and lots of content, try to, you know, bridge with your audience. That's what I'm still learning myself, because I'm more of just an MC. I don't really do too much content or trying to be funny or any of that bullshit, but I need to. That's what my label keeps telling me, is like, bro, you got to start, you know, I mean, engaging with your audience. And you know, I mean, just constantly putting out new stuff, or even if it's just freestyles or whatever. And then besides that, I would also say, just make sure you have a plan B, learn the business, you know, try to get in, get your foot through the door, but then expand and try all kind of things, acting, whatever you can do, get your foot in, and then try to, you know, I mean, expand as far as possible.
Yeah, man. What's your favorite, like at this point, what's your favorite part of the game, and what's your least favorite part of the game?
My favorite part is just the whole coming up with the process. I'm still in love with the blank canvas. And as long as you hear the beat and you're trying to come up with what the beat is trying to tell you, what you hear. And then, you know, it's always fun to show somebody a new song and they go crazy or whatever and be like, oh my God, I still got it. Yeah, the other bad part is just the politics and, you know, I mean, how shady record companies and people like that can be. Everybody's out here trying to, you know, I mean, get over on somebody if what you're publishing or whatever they're trying to do to get, you know, I mean, to rip you off. That's been the music business since the beginning of time, though.
That's crazy, man. Hip hop turned 50 this past summer. What's your thoughts? You think they did a good job representing the West Coast, or it was just all East Coast, huh?
No, I've seen a couple of things where they had like E-40 on there. They had Yuck Mouth and the Loonies for I Got Five on it. Yeah. Depending on which ceremony it was. I mean, there's only so much West Coast stuff. I mean, the NWA, I don't know if I've seen too much of it. But yeah, most of it, I mean, takes it back to the original Kool Herc and, you know, I mean, the day where it started out in the Bronx. So, I mean, it's understandable. So, I mean, there's a little bit of mix, but yeah, it was more catered to the East.
Yeah, I felt like maybe the down south. I saw Uncle Luke saying like, man, they totally left us out. You know what I mean? Like, of our contribution. I mean,
yeah. When people think of South music, they forget about Uncle Luke. They don't really put Miami in the South category, I don't think.
Yeah, man. There's no Rick Ross without Uncle Luke. I mean, that's straight up. Like, they're pioneers of the South.
Facts.
All right. These days, which one you think is still relevant to the people? Too Short or E-40?
I mean, they're both still relevant because they just did the Mount Rushmore. You know what
totally
I mean?
Relevant.
Snoop, Ice Cube, E-40, and Too Short all on the same album together. I would say E-40 is more active. He drops like an album, like a double album every year. This guy's like just never stops. So I would give it to E-40 because he's always putting a new project out. Sometimes he puts out like four a year, so it's crazy.
Who do you think is like the top three artists in San Diego right now that's buzzing really hard right now?
I mean, I would definitely go with my dude, Adonis the Hottest. We got that Make a Mess track together. He went crazy on that in his new album. He just had the What's Happening challenge, so he had the whole city doing that little challenge, and I must have seen like 100 different people put their verse up. So yeah, he had the What's Happening challenge. So Adonis the Hottest. I think Owe, you know, I mean, he got out of jail and he came back to San Diego and he started doing his thing, got everybody, you know, I mean, he looked like he's back on his way up. You know, I think he had to go to prison for a while, so it's good to see him back out and doing his thing. As far as the third, I mean, I could see Don Elway, he be doing his thing. I'm trying to think off the top of the head, but I would give it to probably those three that I see right now. T-Keys, then he be doing his pimp hop, you know what I'm saying? His visuals, we use the same director, TR Films, and every time he comes to one of his videos, they're coming out looking crazy too, so. He does the thing, but he be doing it mostly for the ladies, obviously.
Do you think you're still growing as a songwriter? Do you think you're still growing as an artist? Like, with, you know, with each project you drop, like, you know, I'm thinking, like, for us MCs, like, the goal is to get better as time goes on, I believe, you know?
Right.
And Do you think like you're still getting sharper and sharper for each album?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still learning how to, because I mean, hip hop is a braggadocio sport. You know, I mean, it's from the beginning of MCs is I'm better than you and I can rap better than you. And I'm trying to learn more about just, you know, reality raps, telling stories, or telling people your life story. So, because most of my stuff is always just telling people how much better I can rap than them. But my job is, I mean, I'm trying to expand and learn how to be more like a storyteller, like Scarface, or, you know, just give people more of who you are, because most people want to learn about who you are as a person.
Yeah, man, you're definitely visual with all your rhymes. Like, how do I say this, man? It kind of reminds me of like a Biggie, because, you know, when Biggie dropped Life After Death, you know, Ready to Die was dope. But when he dropped Life After Death, it was kind of like he pulled back the curtains and we saw what was really going on in his life, you know?
Right.
I always think that that's an artist that stands out. Like, if an artist can make you feel like you can really, you have a front row seat to their life, that's when you know they're being honest, like spilling that shit, you know?
Yeah, they usually say, I mean, a sophomore jinx is, because yeah, they say your first album is like your whole life savings. You've basically been writing all your music for your first album. So that's why it usually comes out to be like your best project. And the second one, you have to like come with all brand new material. But for him, it seems that second album was nuts. Too bad he couldn't stay alive to see what would have happened.
So like, we saw the first 50 years of hip hop and where it went, where it has been, what it has evolved to. Where do you think the next 50 years of hip hop is going to go? Like, what now? What's the next 50 years looking like?
I think hip hop is just messing with other genres. Mm-hmm. I see like electronic. I've been seeing a lot of that lately. You know, I mean, I've been seeing like people in Japan and people in other countries. You know, I mean, I would personally want to start mixing with other people from other countries. You see a lot of country music actually incorporating hip hop into it now. It's just kind of seeping into other areas. So I could see it just blending with, I mean, hip hop is pretty much in everything now. So the beat, the drums, they're using the same drums that we've been using for years.
Do you think when we reach our 60s, our 70s, the hip hop that we grew up in the mid 90s, do you think that will still be preserved, or you think it's going to fade away as the years go on? Or do you think it's going to be like a cult following for that time? You know, like what we grew up on, like, will that fade away, or we're going to keep it up and preserve it? Right. I wonder who's going to carry that on, that type of sound.
Right. It's kind of like classic rock on a rock and roll radio station or something. But I feel like, you know, I mean, as long as you got those classics like Wu-Tang, Biggie, Nas, Jay-Z, you know what I mean, or you know, from the West Coast, you got Ice Cube, or you got Snoop Dogg, Doggy Style. I mean, those are classic ass albums that just can't go anywhere. They might be playing on like an old school radio station. And I think the other day I was driving around and I heard 50 Cent on an old school radio station that made me feel old as hell. So.
And this is what I know about D2. Like, I think about all the classic nights in San Diego. Like, every time I party with D-Boy, man, it's going to be a 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning type of situation. Every time. Like it's always like that. It's always fun. And let me ask you this. Like, do you think, like, because when I hear your music, bro, you capture that San Diego party life for sure. Like, how much fun have we had in San Diego? We had a lot too much.
Yeah, that's an understatement. I mean, it's baby blue outside whenever the party ends. You see white people jogging when we're leaving the house. But yeah, I mean, this has been an ongoing thing. Sometimes a little too much partying, because we be acting like we're rock stars and making millions when we're not. We need to stay in the studio. But yeah, we get a healthy mix of both, you know what I'm saying? A little bit of partying, and then you got to get back to work too.
But I think that gives your music some color, like you know, I believe we can balance it out. We do have to work hard, but sometimes I think playing hard is needed too as an artist. You know, we need that sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. You gotta have the club mix so that you can the ladies want to dance.
Let me ask you this, man. At this point, is it hard to maintain a relationship with the type of life? Like, you know, like as an artist, is it hard to stay away from temptation out there? Is it easy to maintain a relationship?
I mean, for me, for a while, I was doing my little player stuff, so I wasn't really worried about that. I was just I was worried about the money and all that. But you know, now that I'm older, I'm trying to you got to settle down at some point in time. So I feel like if you do find the right girl, she can also help you stay grounded. You know, a lot of rappers are. Back in the day, they try to tell you we don't love those hoes, and it's not fun. It's not cool to be married. But I think they're changing that perspective. Everybody's starting to accept the fact that you can also be a rapper and still have a wife and a life at home, and not have to be going out here being crazy all the time. That's more for a young man's sport.
What type of lady is gonna make D-Boy settle down? What are the traits you're looking for, dog?
I mean, I have one lady I'm kind of talking to right now, but she's a little older. I can't be talking to none of these young girls out here that can't cook, don't know how to clean. You know, you listen to Cardi B, she's like, I don't cook, I don't clean. I'm like, oh, hell no, I don't want nobody like that. So, I mean, I want a normal woman who's, I got to be an older woman, older than 30 now. So.
Yeah, would you say like your taste is changing as a... Would you say like your taste is changing as the years go by, as you grow, like your taste is changing too, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, obviously back in the day, as long as I just wanted a sexy body, pretty girl, and doesn't matter, you know what I mean, what's going on, you, it's more about attractiveness. But now you're looking for a woman who's nurturing or can be, you know, hold you down, and when times get rough, yeah, all that sexiness don't help when, you know, when shit hits the fan.
Yeah, man, we need a strong one. We need a strong one for sure.
Yeah, every king needs a queen.
So, D, after this album, The West Coast Has Never Sounded Like This, what's next? What's next up for 2024?
Right now, I was young. I mean, because Flossy, I did that album because I'm trying to shop these around and hopefully maybe get a deal. It's because all the independent stuff has been cool, but it's not getting me where I need to go. I still need the machine behind me to get the marketing that I think I need to get out there, because you know I'm putting it out there myself and I'm getting some feedback, but I mean it's, eventually you might want to get with a major if it's not working. So that's why I dropped that one. He told me no more albums, just start dropping singles, you know what I mean? So I'm gonna try to do like a single maybe once or every 2 weeks with a video, and just let those keep adding up. In the meantime, just keep doing West Coast Wednesdays. I'm about to start dropping those. I'm trying to learn how to edit my own videos so I can start, you know, just doing more content. You know what I mean? Just quick freestyles and stuff like that to keep people engaged. And then, you know, slowly but surely try to build up a bigger fan base.
Yo, D, I don't see you too heavy on Instagram. Like, are you active on IG?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing I'm trying to start doing more of, because I really don't get on there and, like, you know, go live or anything like that. I just post my videos. I post my new artwork. Maybe, you know what I mean, a couple of pictures here and there. But I'm more active on Facebook, but I definitely need to start transitioning over there. And, you know, because more people are musically looking for stuff over there. And same thing with Twitter. I used to be a lot more active on Twitter, but, you know, for a while. And then my old one got deleted or got taken apart because of the case that I had. So now I had to start a brand new one. And it's like just starting from scratch.
You know, on a more somber, serious note, I've been thinking about him lately. What are some of your fondest memories of Wax Click?
SL500, I remember it was about like 2005. This is back when Lil Wayne was like, you know what I mean, starting to skyrocket and become one of the best rapper.
Yeah.
Lil Wayne was performing at San Diego Sports Arena. And when I was in the audience, and it was the opening act was Wax Click. This is back when SL500 had this dude named Rio. It was him and Rio. And I can't think of who the other guys were because the members have been changed out throughout the years. But once they got off stage, I was walking around trying to get something to go get a beer or something, and then I seen him walk by, and I just gave him props. I was like, yo, you niggas is you guys are gassing, bro, whoop whoop whoop. And he was like, oh, it's nice to meet you, blah blah blah. And I was like, yeah man, it'd be dope to get you guys on a do a little track together. So I'd say like a week or two later, he pulled up and at the studio we had in Spring Valley. Me and him knocked out like two songs that night. That was the first time me and SL500 met. Throughout the years, we just kept, you know, working together. We did a song, me and him, in San Quentin from the Bay Area, trying to get shows. And we did that video. He did a little bit of time in jail. And then when he got back out, I'm like one of the first persons he saw, and that's when No CEO was doing big things out here. We was throwing shows at Fourth and B and all that.
Yep.
We were trying to get we were getting him on and trying to get him back out there again. He was always a solid dude. You know what I'm saying? Used to be one of the best hosts in San Diego. You know, we doing that. I know that. So everybody would love SL 500. It was you know, shocking and sad when the day I found out that he passed. But at least he passed by natural causes. Nobody took his life. It's just God called him home.
Yeah, man. I do remember the 16 bar challenge. What was that venue that he? What we do at the 16 bar challenge, D?
There was the lounge downtown, but I'm trying to think what the name of it was.
It was not too far from the airport, but I remember we would do that a lot. And do you remember the night we opened up for Rappin' Forte?
Nah, vaguely. What location was it?
Man, it was that same venue where we would do the 16 bar challenge. And
there was one at Riley's. There was one downtown that white used to have. We used to call it like a. I mean, the lounge, but I want to come up with, I can't really think of the name. I mean, because I won the 16 bar challenge 2 years in a row, but one time it was in, I think in Riley's or something, and then they switched it to this outside place over downtown in the back of some house or some shit.
Yeah. I remember the night the Rappin' Forte came. One of the, you know, there's so many fond memories in San Diego, dude. Yeah, man, the community took a big loss when Wax died, for sure. And we all felt that, you know?
Yeah, we did the barbecue forum and try to raise some money to, you know, help his family with all the stuff that they had to go through. It's very sad.
And he was always positive energy, huh? He was always positive.
Yeah, that dude had me rolling. He's a funny dude.
Yeah, dude. And he was getting his acting on too. I know he had some skills in acting. He would talk to me about that too. I miss Wax.
He was doing that and that battle rapping stuff. He was starting to really get going in the battle rapping arena.
Yeah, man. Yo, D, so any shout outs? Anything you want to promote out there before we end?
Shit, I just want to shout out Fault Line, Get Guala. Shout out my dude, Physics the Great. You know what I'm saying? Garf Grizz, my whole squad, Juice. Everybody who been rocking with me and helping me throughout the years. Right now, we're just going to keep on working. I got just started the new label, Upper Echelon Music Group. Got the logo done by Shy Bully. Shout out Shy Bully. So trying to just rebrand, keep it pushing. And shout out Marlon D, man. Good looking to have me on the show.
For sure, D. I appreciate you, man. You've always been the big homie. And thanks for being supportive always, bro. I'm going to hit you back on the text right now, all right?
No doubt.
AMD Podcast, we did it. Paper Chaser, one love. Peace.
Peace.